Welcome to another Directions Media Podcast. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief. Today we have a very special executive interview with David Schell, the chairman of the Open Geospatial Consortium. Mr. Schell helped to found the OGC and acted as its president when the organization began in September 1994. David, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, I'm very pleased to have this opportunity. In fact, I've been looking forward to talking with you about the role of OGC and Standards Consortia. I'm particularly interested in commenting on the potential for consensus standards and standards-based architectures like the OGC reference model to influence not only IT, but IT processing, but public policy in general. I'd like also to emphasize the uniqueness of geospatial interoperability in the context of ongoing re-engineering of IT infrastructure and processing environments. We can get into that a bit. I think we should get into that a bit because I think it's very important for people to know that there's more to the science of interoperable geoprocessing than either GIS or information technology, that a lot of the complex issues that we're facing as a society, whether we know it or not, really do require that we develop a more holistic approach to observation and understanding. So these things, I hope, will come out as we talk. They're the animus of what we do, and these are things that I'll come back to more and more. So, you know, thank you very much for this opportunity, and I look forward to some interesting dialogue.
So let's set the background a little bit. Most people, in particular geospatial professionals, don't give much thought to standards. What's the main thing about geospatial standards that you would like to emphasize to our readers and the listeners to think about?
Right. That's sort of what I was getting at in my last remark. I think the most important issue is that there really is a basic difference between geospatial standards and the generality of IT standards, in the same sense that there's a fundamental difference between geoprocessing and traditional information technology. And this is really because the standards and the technologies that facilitate geoprocessing are actually rooted in the physical reality of geodetic reference, which means they're not simply abstract engineering prescriptions for manipulating information. There's a big difference in that regard. I mean, it's important to note that geoprocessing represents an aspect of real-world measurement that's fundamental to scientific method that structures academic research, as well as economic theory and public sector policy. In this regard, geoprocessing can give meaning to such basic concepts as ownership, geospatial modeling, and all sorts of decision-making involving situational awareness and the validation of natural or demographic phenomena. So there's a substantial in-kind difference between what OGC is doing, rooted in real-world infrastructure issues, as opposed to simply what you might call an information infrastructure. There's a scientific component to it that that makes it, in a way, analogous to a lot of the engineering issues that are rooted also in real physical measurement.
So by now, here we are, you know, 15 years down the road with OGC, and most of the technology solution providers have implemented, you know, in their products, some of the OGCs, many of the OGCs open interface standards. This would be the Web Map Feature Service, WMS, and the Web Feature Service, WFS. Some have even implemented the simple feature specifications. You know, is the OGC's work nearing completion, and have you set out to accomplish what, you know, was some of your first goals when the OGC first began?
That's a fairly complex question to answer. You know, there are several ways to look at it. Usually, software consortia come into existence to solve a problem. and they go away. Those are the ones generally that are set up by major corporations for a specific purpose. There are other consortia that are set up to do more general things. Generally, as a rule, many of them accomplish a given purpose, and then if they stay alive, they continue to look for additional purposes. OGC is a little different for the very thing reason of, that I was just for the because of the very issues I was just talking about. The OGC's work, I think, is by no means anywhere near completion, and it's hard to think that it will ever be done. And this is again because of the scientific aspect of geoprocessing, ensures its relevance as the scientific community evolves. It's also the case that in recent years we've seen geospatial interoperability become a significant dimension of information technology in general. In ongoing information technology development, it applies to many business, technical, and consumer applications. It applies to mobile computing, logistics, security, many, many applications that have arisen recently that are new, that involves location that hadn't been anticipated. This happens all the time. I mean, the advent of the use of location information in IT processing, it just continually brings up issues relating to new markets. So that it's really the case that geoprocessing has become a major development issue around the world. And each region that does geoprocessing brings additional requirements, not just to, you know, at the application level, but at cultural levels as well. So as long as there's linguistic change, as long as there's political change, you know, as long as the conventions of society continue to evolve as they will, and as long as, there's, you might say, there are national differences between the way different groups of people see reality, there's always going to be some kind of requirement for the development of standards for spatial interoperability. People have different worldviews, different information models, different languages, and bring different perspectives to communication. There's a lot more to say on this, and I could go on forever about it, because we have in the consortium nearly 400 members representing dozens and dozens and dozens of countries and languages, and we're constantly confronting issues that begin as cultural issues but always resolve themselves in various issues of technology interoperability, which seem to be, in their frequency as endless as politics itself.
Right.
So again, to get back to your question, the answer is we don't see the end of the road here, and we set OGC up to be a what you might call a constant communication enabling process, and so far we've observed for the 15 years we've been alive that the world deals us up a whole new set of issues every year.
All right. Let me switch gears a little bit and talk about the world economic downturn that we're currently in, and whether you think that that's hurt the OGC membership, whether it's numbers or overall revenue, and what might that mean for the continued growth of the geospatial technology sector?
Well, that's an interesting question, because from our point of view, yes, we are really aware of the economic situation, but consortia, have a significant amount of momentum. There's a large membership. The work of the consortium serves as a kind of a financial mitigation strategy for many companies. The economics of the consortium are such that it makes a lot of development work less expensive for developers and brings prices down for users. So there's a certain amount of stability that I think OGC can count on generically. It is true at the same time that that OGC management applies a very stringent financial controls. I mean, we're financed by our membership and by the sponsors of our interoperability program. So we have to be very businesslike in managing the resources that they entrust to us. But we haven't yet been impacted. And all I can say is that we have tried to put ourselves in a position where we'll be as safe as possible with respect to further downturns. But the key point is that collaboration in the development of a lot of basic technologies is something that does bring down cost for a lot of our member organizations, and I think that that really helps.
Right. And maybe that's a good lead into the next question, which is actually to some degree the OGC has been expanding to some degree. Some of the things that it's gotten involved in, sensor networks, building information models, grid computing, all of these, you know, you could say that geospatial is a component. How is the OGC working with some of the other standards bodies that may impact the work of the geospatial community? And don't you think that maybe there are some standards organizations that may be better positioned to do this kind of work?
Well, sure. I mean, if you're looking at point technologies like GPS or just simply web architecture itself, then yeah, there's no question that these organizations do what they do better. I mean, we'd never try to do what the IETF does, for example. We'd never try to do what the construction industry standards organizations do. But what we do try to do is understand what the interplay is between the geoprocessing issues and what these other organizations are doing. This is very dramatically clear, for example, with the organizations that deal with building model standards, construction in general, where there's a definite relationship between the built and the built environment and the geographical environment, and yet there hasn't yet been put into place a model for interoperating between these two communities. You know, the conventions, the semantics, the language, the traditions of operation, you know, are different. And so we try to work with these other organizations as much as we can to incorporate their issues within our model, and also to get involved enough with their organizations so that we have a means by which we can interoperate successfully, but we set up a means by which there could be successful interoperations between the community. So we never try to subsume other areas, and we don't think that other areas should try to subsume what we're doing. But it's very definitely the case that there is something called geospatial interoperability science. It's a term we've coined for what it is that we do that applies in many different economic estates, so to speak, of many different industry areas. So we set up a lot of relationships with these other consortia. And one of the challenges is to make sure that these relationships properly reflect the way the technologies on either hand and the processing requirements on either side are able to be compatible, and that these areas can benefit from what we've done with geospatial interoperability. Basically, what we're doing is creating a kind of a service to inform not only mainstream IT, but many of the application markets how to how they can take advantage of the use of geospatial information in a transparent way. Sometimes this has a profound effect, and sometimes it's used, you know, piecemeal for specific issues. But to answer your question more directly, the world needs to be populated by a great variety of consortia representing a great variety of both technology and cultural issues. OGC is simply part of that large matrix of organizations, and we support the idea that to create a really fluid and functional network of relationships among these organizations is the only way you can successfully build a good information infrastructure and spatial information infrastructure.
Right, yeah, understood. Let me talk about KML, Keyhole Markup Language. Google gave KML as a standard to OGC a year or two ago and to maintain it. Obviously, Google wants to encourage the use of its technology as a visualization platform. What do you think the overall impact has been in having KML act as that, you know, interoperability solution for sharing geospatial data? What do you think that has meant to the community?
Well, I think it's meant a lot. I think it's enfranchised a lot of developers. It certainly helped Google be successful in developing its mapping and its imaging products. We spent a long time developing GML, and OGC has a fairly deep understanding of the development and marketing implications of KML. But we see them as really related issues. And then right along, all along, since we first got together, there's been a recognition of the basic requirement to harmonize these specifications, as well as to stabilize KML through a formal standards development process. I think it's good that a specification as widely used and as powerful in its market implications as KML have a basis, or what you might call the validation of status within a formal standards organization. And because of the, you might say, the synergy or the relationship that it bears with GML, it's KML being part of the mix of OGC standards provides the opportunity for harmonization of these standards, which I think brings additional technological resources to KML. So I think on the whole, it's a good thing for Google, because OGC can help to stabilize KML and give it what you might call a public lifecycle management dimension. On the other hand, I think that the relationship between OGC and Google over the KML issue, it does bring more attention to the requirement for an organization like OGC. And as the consumer market develops more and more, and OGC needs to begin to address the consumer market to a greater degree, this association, I think, will be very helpful. And I really actually have to say that it was, given the tremendous development and speed with which Google has created market, it was, I think, very innovative of them to work with a standards organization in anticipation of the requirement to stabilize the specification and have it in effect validated by the community. So it's a win-win situation, and we're looking forward to you know next steps that we may take together. Next month, in fact, we're having a meeting of the consortium at the Googleplex, and we're really looking forward to some interesting discussions that will, you know, further the relationship.
So let me switch gears once again and talk about a press release that you not long ago released about the OGC's new law and policy committee, and I believe that's headed by Kevin Pomfret. Can you maybe more fully explain the purpose of that particular body and its progress to date?
We are very fortunate in being able to work with Kevin Pomfret, who became an individual member of OGC several years ago. Kevin is a very experienced image analyst and subsequently became an attorney who has a real specialty in spatial law and policy. We were finding more and more that policy issues affect the growth and development, even the definition of NSDI issues. And you know as well as I the legal and policy issues that have constrained the geospatial data sharing environment for years and years. We began to realize that one of the driving forces in the market right now, you might say, can be characterized by the legal and policy environment. So we felt a strategic need to bring more intelligence in that area into our strategic thinking. So we asked Kevin to join the board, which he did. He's now in our executive committee. And what we began was a discussion at the board level of the impact of law and policy on our process. And, you know, it's interesting to think that 15 years ago, our biggest problem was getting people to understand what interoperability meant, you know, and to accept the idea of developing interoperability specifications and an architecture. You might say the market at that point was bottlenecked on the technology issues of geospatial interoperability. You know, fast forward, and to put it simply, the market now in many ways is bottlenecked on certain policy issues. You know, it's very much like the feuding that's going on in Washington right now over healthcare. There are many interests that are not technical that we have to understand. Digital rights management is just one of them. You know, there are issues like liability, for example. The interplay between the way licenses, software and data licenses, are written, and the technology of sharing information, and the assignment of responsibility for accuracy. All of these things are very important in terms of the way the market is being structured, and we simply have to understand how to deal with them. Digital rights management was our first effort. We've had a lot of experience with IPR limitations, and there are certain architectural implications of digital rights management that have to do with lawyers more than they have to do with technologists. So Kevin began working with a number of our directors and with a number of the lawyers from various member companies, developing a dialogue about the issues that seem to be most significant. And we've had several events now, public events, on these issues, which have, I think, drawn some significant interest, I think, to the point where Kevin is finding that there's, you know, ample justification to create a separate organization to deal with them, a center for law and policy that can serve as a resource for the industry. Again, I'll come back to one thing that I think is going to hit the industry like a bomb, and that is the issue of liabilities that concern accuracy of information, ownership of information, and various other things relative to things like disasters, accidents, and people relying on information in life and death situations. One very well-known issue has to do with navigation. Someone was relying on a navigation device and drove onto a set of railroad tracks. Where is the liability in something like that? And how do you deal with it? These are issues I think that concern us all, and there have got to be some technical ramifications of it, and that's what we're concerned with discovering.
Yeah, in fact, I had a brief conversation with Kevin, I guess it was last week, about some of those issues. I know he's trying to get several more lawyers involved with the issues and just try to get a core group of momentum going to address some of these. And I assume that a lot of this has to do with the geospatial rights management reference model that you put out. And some of the issues that you just raised have, I think, a lot to do with user-contributed data, the community-contributed information, you know, such as OpenStreetMap, and what that may mean in general. So maybe.
Well, you're right. I mean, the concept of OpenStreetMap is great. No question that it's the crowdsourcing phenomena like that introduce a whole new dimension of information and a whole new mode of analytics, you know, that gives us the ability to manage that information. But at the same time, what's the authority? Who is the authority that can be addressed if something goes wrong as a result of the accumulation of that information? What if a street address is wrong? You know, medicine gets delivered to the wrong address, or what if a road isn't properly defined, or a location of some sort. There's an error in the way it's computed. How does the legal process, which you know is going to be activated in case there are any problems, how does it react? I mean, how does it deal with it? And then how do people in Washington, for example, who are busy right now trying to figure out what to do with the FGDC and the NSDI, how do they know what policies to define? How does the administration know how to define policies to recommend to Congress? How does Congress understand how to develop a statutory profile, you know, to frame what it might want to fund in the area of spatial information?
Right.
This is a very complex area, and I think that major corporations are going to be very, very much concerned, you know, as their stake, their acknowledged stake in spatial information increases.
Right. Let me ask just one final question, if you can address it. The OGC has more than 100 academic members. There's a lot of people out there concerned in the job market. From your perspective, universities doing a good job in preparing young people for careers in geospatial technology?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get the last part of that. So you said our university is doing a good job?
Right, in preparing people coming out of school for a career in geospatial.
Well, that's actually a hard question to answer, first of all, because I've observed that many of the most talented people that come out of university programs, to a great extent, and you know this to be the case in information technology, are self-taught, brilliant young people, you know, who have wandering interests, know how to put things together like you and I can't because we're so old. I mean, this is really a very interesting situation.
That's right.
You know, the older you get, the more tradition bound you get in your thinking, the harder it is to see the world with the eyes of some of these young people. And that's why there's so much innovation. So I think you find a generational problem in the universities where you've got some rigid disciplines for the kids to deal with. And many of the really good ones tend to work around those disciplines. On the other hand, let's hit the ball straight on. I think that in general, university disciplines are not defined in such a way as to provide the kind of education that's necessary to deal with the really complex issues that we find addressing the geospatial community needs to address. I mean, the traditional department of geography, for example, does not really address what I have been calling geospatial interoperability science. Geography and geospatial interoperability, or geospatial geoprocessing, actually, are two different things. The person involved with geoprocessing is a hybrid, somebody involved in information technology who uses spatial information but is not a geographer. And that's a very, very significant specialty. So the geography department isn't necessarily the place, unless there's a charismatic individual, and you know who they are, who is able to lead the department in a particular direction, create a center, create an institute of some kind where eclectic, convergent, you know, technologies can be put together to focus on the complexities of geospatial technology, and then the students that collect around those centers, I think turn out to be better qualified than most to be able to get involved in, you know, this mainstream activity we're dealing with. There are a few such centers. I've been involved personally in the Center for Geospatial Science at University of Nottingham with Professor Mike Jackson, who's on our board. There's an organization that has brought together not only geospatial issues, but semantics and research in cognitive issues, a variety of scientific vectors, you know, that need to be brought together in order to understand the full implications of how you apply spatial reasoning to various problems that we face. Cognitive issues, cognitive sciences, I think, are extremely important, because when you think about all the device technology that characterizes the mobile internet, you're really talking about the man-machine interface. We've been doing a lot of work with Professor Fraser Taylor at Carleton University, whose whole area of cyber cartography deals with this cognitive issue. And there are many places where really innovative work is taking place. But again, I think that traditional departmental boundaries within universities tend to confine people and restrict the point of view of many of our young people, so that they're not really able to focus on how you put things together across academic boundaries, and I think the field suffers from that. So I think there needs to be a lot of attention paid to those innovative academic leaders who are trying to merge disciplines, trying to redefine the role of spatial information in various scientific disciplines, as well as in economic and policy context. And again, that's why I'm concerned, because this interoperability sits right in the middle of all of this, putting the disciplines together and creating this new synthetic approach, which many people, many academics, I don't think realize is so necessary.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to leave it. Certainly, we could talk for a long time on this issue, as I'm sure a lot of people are concerned about what's going on at the academic level. Well, again, David, thanks very much for your insights today. I really appreciate your time.
Well, and I enjoy doing this. It's you're right. There are many issues that you can go on forever about, and of course, there's another reason why the work of OGC will never be done, because everything you've touched on is everything you've touched on is an issue which has very deep roots in our culture and in the way we address forming the policy that governs the way all of this technology is used and applied to different fields. We're at a point right now where not enough attention is being paid to this, and OGC just happens to find itself in a place where it can facilitate some of the necessary developments that will lead to good policy making, good thinking, good management, and, you know, hopefully help to allow society to accomplish some of its more civilized objectives. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk like this.
Well, thanks for joining us today on another Directions Media podcast. If you'd like to comment on our discussion with David Shell, please write to us at editors@directionsmag.com or leave a comment for us in our comments box on either Directions Mag or All Points blog. Thanks again for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.